Hi guys, we're talking to Nick Salupo, a psychotherapist and an author of multiple books on Audible and through Kindle. His books range from developing mindfulness and mental health to increasing your level of running speed. His latest book is Healing Your Inner Critic, Five Keys to Transforming Shame and Experiencing Inner Freedom, is out now. How are you, Nick? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. What about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. I wanted to ask you, and a lot of the questions are going to be pertaining to mental health, but a lot of the time it's very hard for us to define mental health. So how would you define mental health for the average person?
Yeah, I would say it is a sense of knowing that you're able to handle any emotion or any thought that you experience inwardly.
Right, okay.
Being able to handle it well.
And why did you choose to be a psychotherapist?
Yeah, well, you'll notice every now and then my voice goes in and out. I injured my neck when I was young, and it never healed very well. And it was a lot, you know, my voice is a little better now, but it was a lot worse. And living in a world where I just was not able to communicate in the way that I wanted or the way that I used to, brought on a lot of inner angst and inner depression. And so I was doing really badly. And it was, you know, the journey of finding inner wellness, even though my voice may never be the way it was, is really what drove me into that area of work.
So you're a psychotherapist and then you became an author. Was the reasoning behind becoming an author was that you'd gone through so much stuff yourself, and then you just wanted to carry this knowledge, this experience you'd already had, and give it to the next person?
Yeah, it was a lot. One was a really good writer, because when my voice was so bad, I would email everybody. And so I got really good at writing. And the other thing was, yeah, I wanted a way of, you know, sharing what I learned. It seemed like other psychotherapists maybe didn't know some of these things, and it wasn't common knowledge. And I was like, it seems that I somehow stumbled on something rare, and I want others to know this, because so many of us base our well-being on how is my life going, not on our ability to handle our inner emotions.
Right. Okay. And that brings me to something, because COVID has caused a lot of strife for a lot of people, a lot of inner stresses for sure. And we've seen statistically the pandemic has caused a decline in mental health and wellness in a lot of people around the world. What do you think the average person can employ in their everyday lifestyle to combat that?
You mean combat what specifically?
Combat any of these inner stresses. Now, like, the pandemic has caused a lot of people to be isolated. They haven't been able to, and a lot of people aren't that willing to even talk to people anyway. And then when they actually do need help, they have to isolate and be on their own. And it's quite apparent that human beings are very sociable beings. We need to be around other people. And when you take that away for a significant amount of time, sometimes you're left with your thoughts, and these thoughts are not good thoughts. And then you start to see a decline in, your own mental health and a little bit of your own well-being, how you hold yourself. And perhaps you dwell in the past and things like that. There's a lot of stresses when it comes to being isolated in the pandemic. What do you think the average person, particularly in quarantine, can do to combat these inner feelings?
Yes. Well, number one is realizing that a thought is only a thought and an emotion is only an emotion. We add all these meanings onto them, and that's what drives us down into a bad area. And so there's that. And then, the other thing is, and I wrote about this in one of my books, our body plays a big role in our feelings. And so essentially, our nervous system stores emotion in it. And if we're not moving in a good way, we're going to store up a lot of emotion. And so if you're able to get into something like dance or art or anything that allows you to move in a way that is sort of a release in an emotional way, is very good. Because that is a way to dissolve and discharge the built-up emotions in the nervous system. And there's a really good book, Bessel van der Kolk wrote it. It's called The Body Keeps the Score. And it's all about the ways that our bodies store our emotions. And that's why I say dance or art, those are great ways of using the body in order to get out some of those, more negative emotions.
Right. And sometimes these negative emotions, they start to like possess quite terrible critics. Like our own terrible inner critics can be really they're really detrimental to our psyche. Why do you think we naturally possess terrible inner critics?
Well, one is it's evolutionary. When we were, before civilization was developed, we essentially were living in the wild, and we had to be aware of, the individual that was most aware of any danger was the one that would live and survive. Nowadays we have that, but there's no danger around. So we have this evolutionary mechanism. Yeah, there's nothing around us that's dangerous. And then the other big area is that these thoughts are a manifestation of unresolved feelings. So say we were, beaten or verbally abused as a child. Well, there's going to be feelings around that, and when those aren't resolved, it'll manifest in the form of non-stop thoughts that are of a negative nature. And so what I've found in my own life and in my clients is that as they begin to dissolve and work through those emotional areas, their negative thoughts will naturally go away.
Right. Okay. So you work through these emotions that kind of produce this inner critic. Now you spoke about like why we should it is why we have an inner critic. It's most likely hereditary from exactly how we lived our lives quite a long time ago. Do you think there's a positive aspect to having an inner critic? Do you believe that it's good to have a inner critic, but not let the balance get out of whack, and then it becomes incredibly negative, and you hold very high expectations for yourselves that are unrealistic.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, one, the way I word it is I say unhealthy is an inner critic. Healthy is an inner evaluator. So are we able to evaluate rather than shame ourselves and really demonize ourselves? Are we able to say, all right, what is going on? Maybe what do I need and utilize that rather than, you know, shaming and criticizing. So what I've found is that as we heal those emotions, we naturally develop an inner evaluator.
Right. And you brought up shame. You, and also in your book, you mentioned getting, well, not getting rid of shame, but transforming it into something else. Now, why do you believe shame holds us back in life?
Yeah. I mean, shame essentially says, I am not worthy of being alive. I am not worthy of existing unless I do everything right. And nobody's going to do everything right or everything well all the time. And so shame always wins. And on the other hand, an inner evaluator says, yeah, I'm alive, I'm living. And by the way, I'm not going to do everything right. And when I don't, I'm going to evaluate it rather than use it as a way to demonize myself.
Right. So you're working through these emotions and you're making sure it doesn't get to, so you have healthy expectations for yourself, but not unrealistic, because we're not perfect beings. We're human beings. We make mistakes, and that we need to accept these sorts of things. I know that you firstly have a bachelor in exercise physiology, and then you followed on to having a master's in mental health. Is it true that you ran indoor track?
I did.
Right. So that brings me to another question. I mean, you can talk to the, I mean, most people that have done some type of competitive sport can speak to this, but do you think sports athletes should be seeking psychologists and psychotherapists for mental training? Because a lot of the time the physical training is emphasized quite a lot, but for sports that are very much mental, it seems to be lacking. Do you think sports athletes and personally, like professional athletes, should be seeking mental training from psychotherapists and psychologists?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially ones that know how to channel emotional energy into physical performance. And when we don't know how to do that, that's when we choke or lose focus. And so, yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of elite athletes out there that utilize a sports psychologist or a psychotherapist because they realize that, well, if I don't find a way to manage these feelings, it does affect me in a negative way when I'm out on the field.
Right. And so specifically, and it's because you've got a running background, is there any particular techniques you think would be important? I mean, obviously you've got books on it. You've got books for increasing your speed and things like that, but the mental side of running and being in a competitive environment, is there something that you think people can employ, athletes specifically, to employ focus and hone in the task at hand?
You mean like when they're in the game?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So one major one is don't think about what it is you're doing. Just feel in your body. If you're feeling, you know, angry, energetic, whatever it is, feel that. Rather than think about, all right, I need to do this, or I need to move my arms like that. As soon as we do that, we're done. Because we're in that analytical frame of mind. And when we're in that analytical frame of mind, we're always going to be one step lagging in what our body does. So we as athletes, we need to be in a feeling state of mind, not a thinking state of mind. And that's so important in order to be able to react in the moment well. And then, you know, the other thing on that is, and this was a big deal for me as an athlete, Because, you know, when you run in the indoor, sprint, it's only 55 meters. And if you make one itty bitty error in that, you're going to lose. So what I did that helped was I trained very hard every day of the week doing my on my form. And then on the day of the meet, I didn't think at all about my my form, and I wouldn't even do a run out of the blocks. I just would focus in on my inner feelings, and back then I had a lot of unresolved feelings in, and so there was a lot of emotional energy there to channel into a physical performance, but I never thought about it. I thought about it in training, but never in the meet.
Right. So a lot of people, when they're about to do a race or something like that, like they start to be filled with a lot of doubt. Did I do enough? Did I train enough? Did you feel like when you emphasized a lot of training, maybe even on the border of overtraining, it helped you mentally though, because it erased that kind of doubt because you'd put in the work?
Yeah, I was able to say in my mind, I've done everything I could have done to be ready. And you know, there's no use worrying about it. There's no more I would have been able to do over the year, over the month, over the week.
Right.
And that helps so much.
I agree. Now, do you believe that? I believe this is going to be a yes, but I just want to know your reasoning behind it. Do you believe that physical health and mental health are directly correlated? And do you think people should be exercising regularly to improve and maintain their mental health?
I think mental health affects physical health, but you can be very fit and still mentally troubled. And so what I mean is, when you're emotionally well, it resolves a lot of physical ailments like high blood pressure, various bodily issues, even spine and other bone related issues. And so I believe there's a correlation there. I believe being physically well, it is a good preventative measure, meaning, if you're physically well, you're less likely to fall or break a bone. And that means you won't need to deal with that mentally. So does that, I don't know whether I'm answering what you asked or not.
No, you are, you're saying it's complicated. They affect each other, but mostly the mental, I mean, we can stress ourselves sick. We literally can. With any stress or anything like that, we do start to see, if you got high stress, you will have high blood pressure. You spoke to spinal issues. Well, our posture is going to change. Usually when we're emotionally different, we're a bit sad or something like that, our posture seems to follow that. Do you think people that need to improve their mental health should have at least a average physical training regime, or anything simple like walking or running or jogging or skipping, anything that actually gets their nervous system up and going?
Yeah. I mean, I think, when we exercise, we're getting more air, more nutrients, or more oxygen, more blood into our brain, into all the areas of our body. And so that is always a plus. And there's that short term elevated mood as well, right? When we exercise. But even beyond that, if you are able to find exercise you enjoy, like dance mountain biking, whatever it may be, ice skating, snowboarding, any exercise you enjoy, all the better, because enjoyment and playfulness have a direct positive impact on your mental health. So if you're able to exercise in a average, normal way, great. You know, you're getting more blood, more oxygen in all of your organs and your muscles, and that's great. But if you're able to enjoy doing it, all the better. That's where you're really going to get the mental health benefits.
Yeah, I didn't really think of it that way. I just thought of rudimentary stuff like walking and running, but a lot of the time I can say myself, I don't really enjoy it that much. But people will actually stick to the physical regime if they actually enjoy what they're doing, be it snowboarding or playing basketball with their friends, maybe even a social aspect. Yeah. MMA, yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that a lot of the time it's quite difficult for us to work out and do physical exercise when we don't really feel that well. But having that sociable aspect could help as well as you actually just genuinely enjoy, be it a sporting event or some form of training regime, volleyball, anything that actually gets you up out of bed and actually gets you to go work out and do something. And then you reap the benefits physically and mentally.
Yeah. We're made to move. And, you know, in today's day and age, we don't need to move much.
Yes.
And we lose the love of movement. And that's sad to lose that, because our bodies are made to move. So I believe there's a natural joy that we get out of moving. Like when I ride my mountain bike, I love it. You know, I don't need to be with anyone else. I just love being on my bike and riding it. And there's a joy that's there.
Now, you spoke to her like we have to be moving. Our bodies are kinetic beings. We have to be moving our muscles and things like that. Do you think that current society, where we can just, you know, just sit on our phone, we've got everything on our phone, or, you know, we can order food. We don't have to walk to the shops. We've got cars. We don't have to exert ourselves. We don't have to expend those calories and move our bones. Do you think sometimes this convenient society kind of sets us up for having a lot of inattention, a lot of emotions that we haven't got rid of or expressed?
I think it definitely distracts us from an inner awareness. You know, when I'm able to go on, you know, social media and do that, or when I'm able to order whatever I want, or just have any distraction I want right in front of me, it does allow me to avoid my inner awareness. And by avoiding that, I'm going to be less likely to say, what do I need? What am I needing mentally? What am I needing emotionally? So I believe the way we live nowadays, it does maybe add to our downfall mentally and emotionally, because in order to be mentally and emotionally well, we do need some inner awareness and some sense of, all right, I'm gonna do something good for my inner well-being, and not just avoid it by doing or scrolling or being online.
Right, I get that. Now, in your books, you've spoken about self-talk, the importance of self-talk. What do you believe is the importance of positive self-talk? And alternatively, on the other side of the coin, do you think how much damage that does negative self-talk produce?
Well, it's, you know, most individuals that have done a deep amount of emotional healing work realize, self It doesn't mean a lot. It holds very little value. As an example, when I'm writing my book, I wrote one, Learn to Love Yourself Again. And as I was writing that book, I would be writing and I would think, I'm never going to finish. I'm never going to finish this book. And it didn't matter to me that I had that thought, because I knew, well, all that is neurons firing. It doesn't matter what I think. It matters what I choose, how I choose to use my mind. So I don't view thoughts as carrying a lot of weight. I view thoughts as the mind, and I'm in charge of how I use my mind. So this, the mind is more of a tool that I use, not something that gives me my identity. Now, when we let it give us our identity, self-talk can be very, very damaging.
So you expressing that there is the power of the mind, but you're not letting it control you. You're using it as a tool in your life. We may have thoughts or intrusive thoughts, but we can pick things that we want to choose to do. The just because we have these positive or negative thoughts doesn't mean it's who we are. It's what we pick and choose to do in our lives.
Yeah, and I think, you know, before we arrive there, we maybe need to understand that I'm identifying with my mind. I'm viewing my mind as me, and that is a problem.
Right. Okay. And I wanted to talk to you about a lot of anxious people. The world can be a very anxious place, and a lot of anxiety can be caused by a lot of tools, be it social media or just our own stresses in our life. What would you say to people that excessively worry a lot every day?
I would say there is an unresolved emotional trauma. Worry is fear projected into the future as a way to avoid the now.
Right. Okay. So in order to not excessively worry, they need to find that little pin. They need to pinpoint that point which made them have excessive worry
and promote
a lot of fear.
Yeah. Yes. What am I avoiding in the now that I'm projecting my fear into the future? What am I afraid of in the now?
Right.
Normally, it isn't a danger. It's some feeling.
Okay. All right. And it's not letting that fear overcome you as well. It's realizing the fear is there, but not engaging with it.
Yeah. Just learning ways to process through it rather than needing to avoid it.
Right. And we're all going to worry anyway, but excessively worrying can interfere with our inner peace. What's something that could help people to feel a tiny bit happier and move towards inner peace every day? Do you believe it's meditation? Do you think it's learning about mental health, be it reading books? Do you think it's exercise? Do you think it's being with company or friends? Do you think it's just finding joy in something you feel meaningful?
Yeah, well, there's a neat little myth of an old tribal community. And when somebody there is sad, they say, when did you stop dancing? And most of us, we stopped dancing whenever that emotional wound set in. We didn't dance through life anymore. We began to get very serious about life. So number one is, what are you able to do to be playful and you know, dance, so to speak? And so there's that. And then, you know, the other big, big area is sitting. You know, I tell my clients to do this. Normally it takes them a while to do it. Sit down alone, no noise, no distractions, no phone, only a journal. And just notice what feelings are arising in you. And note them. Don't bat them. Don't fight them. Don't analyze them. Just note them. And the more throughout the day we're able to note our feelings, the more inner peace we're going to have.
Right. So you're teaching yourself to notice your emotions and not fight with them, but let them come to you and pass, or if they stay with you, be present and understand that you're just feeling an emotion at the time.
Yeah, don't give them any meaning in your mind.
Right. And you've written a lot of books. I think it's about 9 on Amazon, at least, or across Kindle and Amazon. A lot of the books are on motivation or self-motivation. What is the number one thing that motivates you personally?
That is a good question. What motivates me? I would say meaning motivates me. So there's some meaning that I'm living for in my life, and that meaning is number one, gaining more and more inner well-being, and then number two, being able to let that inner well-being pour out onto others. I believe we live in a world where inner healing is so needed, and I just have a sense that that is my life's meaning, is to work on my own inner healing and then give that away to others.
Right, I understand that.
The meaning drives me.
So the meaning that you've made is that you've gone on your own personal journey and you've picked up a lot of wisdom and experience, and obviously, wisdom and experience is something that you get after an experience, but you wish you had beforehand. Now, through your books, you're passing that on to other people. And by doing so, you're promoting a lot of positivity and helping a lot of people. And that drives and motivates you, self-motivates you. Is it sort of like a positive feedback loop for you? Is just increasing the horsepower of the engine?
Yeah, I mean, you know, no doubt about it. I'm not saying that I'm altruistic. I'm saying that this is something I enjoy. It's something that brings meaning, and meaning is good. I like having meaning. And so I'm doing it. There's also areas in my life where, you know, there isn't that deep meaning there, other than, well, I might enjoy this. I might enjoy, you know, going mountain biking, or I might enjoy dancing, or whatever it may be. And so, yeah, you know, I don't want to make it sound like it is a saintly thing. It's, you know, I believe we need meaning as humans, and finding ways to build and make meaning is so important.
Right, I get that. I find that in a lot of our lives, just running through the motion of things kind of defeats the purpose, because it doesn't have meaning behind it. It doesn't have that special characteristic behind it. I wanted to come to this question. Like I spoke earlier that you had a bachelor's degree in exercise physiology, but on the other hand, you have a master's degree in mental health. What side attracts you more, the physical well-being or the mental well-being? Which knowledge in which area attracts you the most?
Yeah, I would say the emotional well-being, and that is sort of both, right? Because emotions are physiological, they are biological, and they seem to be directly related to our thoughts as well. So that's sort of a middle ground answer. But definitely the emotional well-being is what drew me into the work, not necessarily the mental, or not necessarily only the physical, but the way our emotions, you know, they seem to have one leg in both worlds.
Right. Okay. And last question. If you... just to someone that is listening or watching this or stumbles across it, if someone's struggling right now mentally and is not in a good spot, what is something that you would say to them to get them back on the right path of feeling better?
Well, number one is feelings are normal. It's normal to feel feelings. It's not normal to judge our feelings. So please don't judge your feelings. Having feelings is all right. It's natural. And so I would invite you to not judge them. And when you're ready, find a safe way to express that, whether that means you need to cry into a pillow or yell into a pillow or get in your car and yell or dance and let out your feelings as you dance, find a safe way to let them out without judging yourself. And then last, finding support. If you're in a dire situation, there are hotlines out there, but you know, there are also meetings out there. The Mankind Project, 12-step meetings like Emotions Anonymous is great. There's a meeting every night of the week online. And so finding that support you need is also a big deal. And please don't judge yourself about wanting support.
Right. Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to speak to you. We were talking to Nick Salupo. His latest book is out on Amazon. It came out last year in December. Healing Your Inner Critic, 5 Keys to Transforming Shame and Experiencing Inner Freedom is out now. Thank you very much, Nick. I appreciate it very much. It was a pleasure to speak to you. You certainly got a lot of wisdom, a lot of knowledge, and I'm glad that you're sharing it with other people and promoting a lot of positivity. And I really do think that a lot of people will find a lot of power in what you say. Thank you very much.
Great. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Nick.